I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, Johnny's rude office chair.
Right, Richard, let's have a game. Pretend I'm a sort of oral street magician, okay? Ready?
Yeah.
Pick a Brian, any Brian. Famous Brian. Someone that...
Oh, okay. Oh, right, not just like...
Not just anyone, not just like your decorator who came in the other week.
Yeah. Brian Cant.
Right, Cant, good. Any idea where Cant... I mean, he's dead now, isn't he?
Brian Cant, yes,
yeah,
I think he is.
Do you know his place of birth or where he dwelt when he was...
Where he dwelt? Oh, we don't know where he dwelt, but I believe he's from Ipswich.
Brilliant. Ipswich, done. Let's lock that in. I sound like a game show host. I've come... I went away for the weekend, the other weekend, for the first time in, I don't know, 7 years. And... And the London to Brighton was on just the week before.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's a bit boring, isn't it, London to Brighton? You know, as my brother would say, vintage car toss that not even car enthusiasts care about. But anyway, that's probably a bit harsh.
It's funny, isn't it? It's spindly-wheeled nonsense that nobody could relate to anymore. It's so niche now. I don't mean to do it. I kind of do mean to do it down because I'm not really interested in it either.
But I sort of... There's bits of it, but like my brother said, it's like tiller steer and, you know, drive belts made from buffalo's like, arseholes and stuff.
If the pedals aren't in the right order, I'm not interested. How many of the controls are outside the passenger cabin? Right, piss off.
Everything's outside apart from the seat you sit in. Or you sit outside of the cabin outside? And all the controls are inside.
What were they thinking back there? Right, now.
Listen
this
here.
Throttle. This is the throttle and there's also the control for retarding the ignition. Let's put it on the underside so you have to climb out to get it. That's a good idea, isn't it?
You've got
bizarre.
To... No, you've got the brake pedal is actually right on the back bumper. So if you think you're going to have an oh shit moment, you climb out of the seat, which is very clever. Ghost riding, we now call it. But back then, they didn't call it that. Frightful driving.
Thereby taking you further away from any accident. So it's a safety feature, you see.
That's right.
Now, Mr. Frobisher, where were you planning to put the clutch pedal? Well, I noticed that our rivals put it in the middle, so we can't do that because that'd be copying. So we're going to put it on the ceiling.
Well, in the middle of the wheel centre.
Yeah, where's the wheel? Well, it's in the boot, sir. we're saying this, but when we were at Goodwood, whenever that was, at the Speed Week last year, you and I were quite thrilled by some of those silly things are outside the cars that we saw, weren't we?
Yeah,
we were watching them pumping their own fuel as they drove along.
Yeah, we're being harsh just for cheap comedic value. I think what I need to specify here is, I suppose, you'd call them veteran cars rather than vintage cars. So vintage cars are post-World War One.
I don't know.
Veteran cars are like late 1800s and very early 1900s. I forget what the cutoff year is for the London to Brighton, but anyway, I don't know. It's someone
else. It doesn't
move,
like
about
though,
1910
does it?
Or something.
Yeah, I feel like it's 1910. I could look this up.
Oh, no, it doesn't move. So, like, you can buy a vintage car, and if it was seen to have been manufactured 2 weeks after the London to Brighton cutoff, you just can't. It's not eligible, and according to my brother, it makes it almost worthless. Because unless it's got unheard of provenance, like, oh, I don't know, Lord Lucan had regular... This was his car to drive around his estate completely naked twice a week, trying to do time trials whilst gardening. Then you go, okay, there's a cool story attached to it. But ordinarily, the problem is those veteran cars are so far away from people that are alive now, and they're not seen in the media or, you know, films... Instagram, then therefore they're not really gathering momentum of value and interest. So
no, and they're not cars really, are they? They're to people, so popular imagination. Yeah.
It's proper horseless carriage spec. So the reason why I'm just talking about this is because I thought, well, maybe we should mix it up a bit, sort of bring some fresh eyes into the London to Brighton. Just call it the London to Brighton. Right? Scrap Brighton. It's boring. It's been done. London to Brighton, it's just, it's always being done. Who cares? So everyone starts in London in these veteran cars with the bad goggles and the terrible jackets and the, you know, face furniture and the
goggles.
I know, so many goggles, and also shoes that just simply aren't appropriate for pressing any pedals. And no.
Everything's tweed.
That's well. Right. That's right.
Tweed goggles. Can't see a damn thing.
Everyone squeezes.
But
one
it's
of those
okay
nose.
Because it has a top speed of 6. So
I'm sure
we're fine.
Someone at the London to Brighton, I'm sure, has one of those flower brooches which actually squirts water. That clowns
do you think?
Have. Yeah, they're definitely. Just before
they
the
definitely have
the
a lot of horns that go.
Loads of that. There's probably quite a lot of self-medicating going on as well, but they just because it's off the period.
Flasks.
You know what I mean? It's,
oh, like laudanum or something, or like a real vintage drug that you can't
old,
get
old
anymore.
Old school, yeah. Oh, let's just do a couple of pipes of opium just to get us off the start line. You know, like old school poets, they'd have a load of that and then they'd start waxing lyrical. It's the only motorsport that allows it these days. But no, I was thinking, not London to Brighton, it'd be London to Brian. So therefore, the person that I asked you to pick, there'd be a tombola, everyone would crowd around, all the cars are ready, and it's right, London to whichever Brian, they pick a Brian out of the hat, the Brian is known, the Brian could be dead, like the one that you've just picked, but you know the birthplace or the family home.
Right,
and
well,
I was
doubting myself then because I thought I was just going to check where Brian Cant was born. He is from Suffolk. He's from Ipswich. But
brilliant.
Where did he die? He died in. He lived in Chalfont St Giles in Buckinghamshire. Lovely.
Okay.
You go there then.
So there we go.
That's a nice place.
But you see, and so the race is on. You get in these horseless carriages and tally ho as quick as possible, and the first person there. Gets an all weekend party with all the friends and the family of the Brian and the Brian if the Brian's still alive.
Would you not have to check with the Brian first? That they want a bunch of spindly wheeled, funny noise.
They get a half an hour warning. They get half an hour
so they can turn all the lights out and hide.
You know what I mean? So they can have a poo and like quickly, you know, have a stand-up wash if they need to or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So, I think it could really add some spice to this event.
Here's a fun fact about Brian Cant. You know the TV presenter Fern Britton, lovely Fern Britton,
yeah.
Lovely jolly Fern.
Yeah.
He was married to her sister.
Brian Cant was married to Fern Britton's sister.
Yeah,
wow.
Cherry Britton. So Brian Cant was
Britton.
Fern Britton's brother-in-law.
Cant for Britton. It just sounds like a campaign.
Cant Britton, yeah.
Or Britton Cant.
Either way. Anyway, good luck with that. By the way, I just looked this up as well. The London to Brighton cut-off, a car has to be built before 1905.
There we go. So if you've got a January 1906, like absolute howler of a contraption, it's not eligible. It's not eligible.
But why can't eligible?
It's not led. No, not legible.
Right. If they had kept it rolling,
yeah.
Where would we be up to now?
Oh, I don't know. 1979.
Well, that'd be good.
When that makes
people go and watch that, wouldn't they? They go, oh, look, there you go.
But then it turns into a furious road race involving high speeds, doesn't it? Whereas at the moment, it's 16 miles an hour, brakes made out of a snake's arsehole, and do you know what I mean? It's just all kinds of. Can you imagine the toolkit of the chase cars? Because my brother was involved in a chase car for the London to Brighton, and it just said because they don't really have similar components because, as you said, this was the time when cars were still deciding the recipe of the car.
Yeah.
So there were still some kind of question marks over drivetrain and materials and all that stuff. Or you go the other way. The car still has to be based on a pre-1905 vehicle, but there's no rules. So you can do as many changes to it as you want, but it sort of has to still be at least 40% 1905 or back.
40%. I think you could do a lot with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So it makes it, again, interesting. So you bring in the Fast and Furious generation, but still has to be 1905 or prior. Could be amazing, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine like...
Yeah, just... It's got a Lancia Delta Integrale engine and drivetrain, but it's still got wooden spoked wheels.
Oh, yeah. Well, imagine you'd have... Would there be any Fords? Folds? Or is that, does that predate... That predates Folds, doesn't it?
Well, I mean...
When was the...
Would there not? Mm. Not Model T, though, but there would be...
So there could be an early fault, and you just have a retrofit Coyote 5-litre mappable ignition. I mean, it could... But also, yeah, potentially with wooden wheels. Or you just go carbon. Spindle mount carbon with the original like sort of I-beam style front suspension and axle. I mean, it could be carnage, couldn't it? But it also could be the most entertaining
carnage. Possible. People are going to start getting silly, aren't they? Sort of like the way that people blueprint their engines and all that sort of stuff for historic racing. And, you know, there's always these allegations that certain historic race cars are kind of Trigger's broom, or that they're actually essentially replicas of the original because they've had so much done to them, and there's all manner of things.
The silhouette races, yeah.
Yeah, so I could imagine that the London to Brighton will suddenly get... They're going to have to close the roads, really, aren't they?
They would have to close the roads, but also it could all kick off on the Brian front, because there'd be famous Brians that don't want a part of this, but maybe if it was...
But I'm going to wager most of them. Also, aren't you going to run out of famous Brians?
No, there'd always be a couple creeping through. Well, it's only once a year, isn't it? I mean, bloody hell, it's not like a weekly pub quiz. It's
a bit of time.
But you could also kind of like... you could knight certain Brians and bring them in, make them more famous than perhaps they were before by maybe doing some calculated social media the year before. So think, we want this Brian to be the next big Brian. So they,
right, like I mean? Brian... I'm
trying to think.
That guy out of Boyzone. No, not Boyzone, Westlife.
Westlife, Brian McFadden. There you go, McFadden's in there. So again, appealing to a younger audience. You're not just going straight for the May or the Blessed or the Ferry... Or the cock.
Or the ferry.
Or the old cocks, not the new cocks. Because obviously new cocks...
Well, you've got two cocks to choose from. That's it.
Yeah, you imagine the confusion.
Bryony bonus.
You get the cocks pulled out the hat. That's it. The flag drops. London to Brian is on. London to Brian is on. It's furious, right? There's so many crazy
maneuvers.
I'm
just going to clip what you just said out of the show and use it as our trailer for this one. Get the cocks out of the hat.
Can you imagine that? So they get the... They get the cocks out of the hat, and they go, and it's not clear which Brian Cox it is. So they go to the wrong Brian's house, and it's a huge Herculean effort because obviously you're doing a top speed of, I don't know, 23. Or actually, maybe you're not. You're doing 230 because it's now resto mods, but we'll see.
Yeah, but even so, I'm going to wager that the older Brian Cox lives in Los Angeles now, so.
Oh, well, that's piss. You've got to charge.
That's a saga, then, isn't it?
Well, you all drive immediately to London Heathrow. where you've got a plane,
shipping containers are waiting.
You've got a jet on the ground with its back door open, and you just go straight into it.
Oh well, you've got to drive. It's already making its way out the runway, Fast and Furious style.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And what you do is, as you break through the sort of back doors of Heathrow, which probably doesn't exist, you throw your passport at the person who's shouting at you and just say, "Check it, it's fine," and then you just keep steaming with your sort of flapping scarf out behind you. Just be amazing.
I've looked this up. Brian, good news, actually. Older Brian Cox lives in New York, apparently, so that's a bit closer.
Okay, so a shorter...
shorter
but still
flight.
A flight. Yes.
/ unbelievably long drive all across Russia.
Well, maybe that's what you do, you see. Maybe it's back to the old-fashioned huge excursion. This is an expedition. Yeah.
Well, in that way, it feels very sort of like the kind of thing they would have done in 1905.
What, just to meet a famous Brian and have
a
banquet?
Sort of needlessly long drive. Lots of incredibly rich, posh people doing a needlessly long drive to show they can.
There we go. I think but also it has to be Instagram
friendly. I
feel like
we workshopped that a bit and we've got there.
The London to Brian.
London to New York, because we pulled Brian Cox, the actor, out of the hat. I think Brian Cox, the physicist, lived in London.
Oh, okay. Okay. So London...
Although, obviously, London, he's from... Oh, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he lives in Manchester.
That'd be nice if he did. It would add... Because, obviously, if it was London to a London-based Brian, I mean, it would be... It'd be a sprint race, would it not? It'd be classed as a sprint race.
I suppose. Well, it depends where you start. I suppose, yeah, you've got to start in London because that's the...
Well, imagine it. You, the Brian gets pulled out of the hat and you all just go, hang on a minute, he's 10 roads away. Right, that's it. It would just be so dangerous. You imagine, because they're not... There's no need to conserve your tyres or your engines or any componentry. You're all in, aren't you? I've watched that.
Yeah, like lots of kind of 80s turbo F1 spec engines running yeah. sort of 1,000 odd horsepower, incredibly high boost, but a lifespan measured in, you know, yards.
There you go, you see, they're sort of ticking time bomb performance engines.
And here I am typing, where does Brian Cox live, into Google. What the... How has it come to this? How?
Welcome to Smith and Sniff. That's how it happens. You know yeah, it.
I guess so. Well, let's just... Maybe Brian Cox has got houses in Manchester or the north somewhere.
Yeah.
He's from Oldham, isn't he? So,
is he?
Yeah, so maybe he's got a house in Lancashire and then a house in London. I don't know. Isn't he still a professor at Manchester University?
I think so. But I don't know how often you have to turn up for that.
No, he's a bit of a celebrity professor, isn't he?
Celebrity so, professor, yeah. Because Brian May's a professor now, isn't he?
Multiple.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, in fact, there's probably quite a lot of famous Brians that have doctorates or a high-ranking status. Blessed's a good one. Imagine the year of London to Brian where it was all about getting to Blessed's house. I mean, he would love it. Wouldn't he?
Here we go. Where does Brian Blessed... I mean, you could find out where Brian Blessed lives by just standing still and listening, and eventually you'd figure it out. Oh, it's coming from over there.
He's having a coffee on his patio one morning and he chuckles yeah. at a small joke. And there's tremors, there's all sorts, there's weather warnings.
He lives in Surrey.
Okay, so... Was that classed as a sprint race? It could be.
It's pretty close to London.
Yeah, I think sprint race if they're modified veteran vehicles.
Oh, hang on, wait. Oh, I've got more specifics. He lives near Windlesham. I don't know where Windlesham is.
I've driven through Windlesham not that long ago. Okay.
Windlesham is... It depends which bit of Surrey. Because as you get further into Surrey, actually, sort of, it's deceptively far from London.
It is.
Hang on. Oh, it's that bit. Okay, it's near Lightwater, sort of.
So it's that bit.
It's that bit.
Oh.
Not as far as Frimley or Farnborough. Is Farnborough still in Surrey?
No.
I don't know.
Farnborough's Hants. It's close
Hampshire,
as Hants, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, well, this is
interesting. Oh, and Camberley. No, but Camberley is further on, and Camberley is in Surrey. I know that, so...
Hacking Camberley, yeah.
It's near Bagshot.
Yeah.
You're listening to Smith and Sniff, the podcast in which two friends speculate about where places are in Surrey.
And without any maps in front of their faces. That's right.
I have an irrational dislike of Surrey that's based on nothing, because, I mean, I used to go there all the time when we were filming Top Gear, which was done sort of near Godalming. But I think it's because I'm from the north. There's a sort of Surrey... The word Surrey just seems to sum up a lot of what northerners don't like about the south.
Oh, is it sort of like smug kind of wealth?
Yeah, and yeah. Comfortable wealth.
Comfortable wealth in Surrey.
I'm saying this, I'm from Wilmslow, so I'm hardly like, oh, we was dragged up. But there's something, and I just... Because I was down there once with my wife, and we were driving somewhere very leafy, really fucking leafy.
Lovely leafy place.
And she went, this is lovely. Why don't we live down here? And I went, because it's Surrey. And she couldn't understand at all. She thought I was mad. And then a few weeks later, I was talking to my brother... My wife was there, and I said, oh, we were down in Surrey the other week, and yeah, she was wondering why we don't live down there. And he just went, because it's Surrey. And I was like, see? Do you see? It's ingrained, because we're from a different part of the country, that we just don't... Even though where I'm from was often described as the Surrey of the North.
I was going to say, I think it does share a lot of similarities, a lot of gated communities and things, I bet.
Mm, I know. So it's pure hypocrisy on my part.
I should be dissing both of them and just saying, you need to keep it real and come down my grove.
Well, who are people from Somerset sneeringly dismissive of for no real reason?
That's interesting. People that can spell Devon, their name really
Dorset,
quickly.
North Somerset.
I used to be a little bit, but I mean, it depends obviously which part of Somerset you're from. I was always a little bit wary of people from the levels.
Right.
But Glastonbury side, which is the most glamorous end these days. But the levels is a bit damp and boggy, and the geography is just not as pretty as West Somerset. So I'm just going to put that out there. I wouldn't live on the levels. Nah.
Good.
No, you're not going to catch me on the levels, mate.
No, it's fine. No way, mate.
Not doing it. No. So there.
Now, I was going to. I just got to tell you about something that happened to me two or three days ago. I almost had a palming disaster.
Oh,
because
okay,
I have just been driving around in my Range Rover.
Perfect. I've
segued
car.
Seamlessly into this, having just been sneering about people in Surrey being rich.
I know.
My 11-year-old Range Rover. So let's not get carried away. But anyway, I've been driving around in that quite a lot. Now, of course, an old 322 Range Rover is the quintessential palming car. Outside of a Jeep Cherokee from the 90s or
a 50s Cadillac.
Jag, yeah. Or a 50s Cadillac. But even then, I think the wheel rim would be too thin
actually,
for
the rim
palm
is,
purchase.
Yeah, the rim is too thin. You're absolutely right. The Bakelite rim.
You need a thicker, modern rim.
Yeah.
But then a good sort of, you know, high-output pass pump that's just really good. It's got your back.
there's your instant John Peel session right there.
Yeah, high-output pass pump. So I have just been tooling around the Range Rover. Lovely. All go well. People, I get asked a lot, relatively speaking, on all branches of social media, how's your Range Rover going? Is it broken down yet? And I don't want to jinx it, but I will say everything is tickety-boo. And even though last week I suddenly spotted there was a wire dangling down behind the back wheel.
I saw that.
So I've plugged it back in and nothing has changed. And it makes me wonder what the wire does. There's an identical one on the other side. And I presume...
Is that for an optional thing which you didn't
opt? Don't know. I just don't know. I was a bit excited because I thought, because the parking sensors have never worked properly. Okay. Well, at all, really.
And okay, so when you say the Range Rover's tickety-boo, what you mean is...
Oh, yeah, but they've never worked, so that doesn't count. Oh. It doesn't bother me because it's still the backup camera works if you really want to get tight into a space.
Right.
I'm not a fuss.
Backup camera.
But I was a bit excited. I thought, what if this is the reason the parking sensors don't work? It's because this wire's been loose the whole time, but no. So I still don't know. Still don't know what the wire does.
It's
but
amazing.
Clearly, it doesn't matter whether it's in or out because nothing's changed. So, just been tooling around the Range Rover, all very lovely,
sweet, lovely,
sweet car. But of course, basically, all steering that I've been doing has been palming because that's, you know,
city driving.
I could have gone to Cadwell Park for a few laps and I'd still have been palming it. And then I had cause to get in my 911, and I was pulling into a side street that I know quite well, and it's just an easy palm in the Range Rover. So I went to palm the Porsche. It's sort of the steering's much much heavier
and quicker
and quicker, and the wheel is much smaller. All negative palm qualities, and I sort of got the lock on, but then the car fought back, and I almost hit a parked car at the curb.
You absolute palming failure.
I mean, it was a fucking squeaky bum moment, I don't mind telling you. So yeah, and I thought, but of course the first thing I thought once I'd regained my composure was I must remember to tell Johnny about this because I know that you love palming.
I do, so. I have to say. Did I ever tell you, this was a long time ago when I worked on performance tuning magazines, when I had my multicoloured Mercedes 123. Did I ever tell you that one day I went to an auto factory and just saw that, you know, they have like a dusty, couple of dusty top shelves with old car accessories on that you sort of chuckle at?
Yeah.
Well, on there I noticed a couple of steering knobs and thought, oh, look at these old stock steering knobs. They're real enough. And they were about £4. So I bought one for a mate of mine and posted it to him for a joke, for like a birthday joke. And the other one, I went home and I bolted it onto the Mercedes wheel. And for a few days, it was like, oh, this is brilliant. Just got the, you know, the turner wheel. If listeners don't know what I'm talking about, they were used to be fitted a lot to trucks and vans when things weren't as assisted. And tractors. So you could really wing it round. Anyway, I was enjoying myself at the wheel of the Merc, but I've realised...
Did your Merc have power steering?
It did have power steering, and it was quite light, so it was sort of unnecessary. Yeah. And I think what I did was you know the term overdriving? I think what I was doing... I think I overdrove into a junction, but it was oversteering rather than overdriving, because the speed of the driving was not dissimilar to what I normally do. But the problem was, is I went so quick on the handle, I almost did a U-turn and smashed up the curb really aggressively. I put one of those bulges in the sidewall of my tyres, you know, those warts. and then put the tracking out, which cost me £30.
Oh, man.
And just because... So I took the handle off and it was like, screw you. You've cost me like... You've just gone and cost me £100. New tyre, tracking, just because I was dicking around. But Well, I was just being a plank with my turning handle. But yeah.
I always associate them now with forklift trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And because there's nothing as delightful as watching a very proficient forklift truck operator.
That's so true. Because they're zero steer, aren't they?
Yeah, and they just zoom about and do a lot of that, like, really good.
God, you've just given me a massive deja vu of the handle turning fury of when I was at primary school, and I sometimes used to daydream out the window, which you might find hard to imagine. I used to do it especially when the grounds people were coming, you know, to mow the lawns, and they'd have gang mowers on the main thing, and they'd have those mowers with the lift up front blades, which once I could lift up and drop down as you go around trees and things.
Rear steer. They're sort of like one of those flying things from Star Wars. I can't remember which one.
Yes.
Darth Vader's thing.
Yeah, I know the thing you mean. And I think they used to be made, or still are made, by Ransoms, which were one of the oldest mower companies in the world.
Yeah.
But
it's not Darth Vader's thing, is it? It's the shuttle, isn't it? A shuttle that arrives with something on it. I can't remember.
Bloody hell, Richard. I don't know, do I? Because it's...
No, I'm asking the wrong person.
You are. I don't know anything about Star Wars.
Yeah, but you deliberately don't know anything about Star Wars, do you?
It's okay. Look, it's
willfully
okay.
Slough your mind of Star Wars information if you can.
My kids enjoy it. I think the music's really good. And I always thought AT-AT would have been better. Exactly the same design, but just wheels. I always thought that would have been better.
Yes.
But anyway, yes. Aside from those things... bollocks, I forgot what I was saying. What was I saying?
Well, no, so it was a mower.
Oh, yeah, a mower.
That was made by Ransom.
And those Ransom mowers, they were zero steer. And remember, the guy would always have ear defenders on. Nowadays, of course, you probably have ear pods. And he just used to, like, I could tell. You know, you can select a gear and there's sort of hydraulic, it's like a hydraulic gearbox on those. You can select a gear, and I think he left it in the sort of speed that you drive it from one lawn job to another lawn job, so maximum speed. But he would leave it mowing, and he would try and sort of slalom in and out of the bushes and the trees.
Wow.
But, of course, because it's rear steer, you've got to be ever so delicate on the wheel. And he had a turner handle. He had a turner handle. So there were a few times when I think he went into a bit of an accidental whip but he was still mowing at the time. This is brilliant. And of course, you can't have a conversation about any mower without constantly referring to the fact that Tiff Nadell rolled his tractor mower by mowing his own garden at an angle, trying to set his own PB, which is a story that never gets old.
Trying to beat his own.
Just
his own
Tiff
PB.
Nadell in mower PB shocker. Yeah, it's just pretty, it's just amazing. The lawnmower PB.
It's going over. and then it did. That reminds me of something.
Yeah.
I saw a thing plugging the new series of Fifth Gear the other day, and I was a bit thrown because Tiff's not on it and you're not on it.
This is true. Well, we know that Tiff hasn't been on it for two series or so. Which
it just looks weird, because there's Vicky and there's Potato, and they've got Rory Reid now doing it, which again threw me, because I was like, but he's on Top Gear. Oh, no, he's not now. I forgot. You know, it's kind of
musical chairs, isn't it?
Musical chairs, yeah. And then who else they got? Oh, they've got Jimmy Cadillac DeVille.
Yes.
Is on there.
Coop DeVille, yeah.
And there's a couple of other people as well.
Yeah, there's...
But Tiff, so Tiff got binned off a couple of years ago, didn't
he? Yeah, he did, which was controversial. And I personally think it was the wrong decision, because I think he's still got it despite being 70. He's still fully on it. And he's very entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
He's like one of the best in our business, isn't he?
Yeah. I think that's the thing. People take him for granted because he's been around for a while. But the fact that he can talk and wildly power slide at the same time.
Of course.
Is an incredible skill. And it's not just that. He's actually a very good assessor of cars and a good journalist because he's obsessed with information and then being able to sort of relay that information.
That's
and
true.
He is a very, very skilled broadcaster. He doesn't get the credit he deserves for that either.
That's true. He's never slackened off, actually. He always runs quite a tight editorial ship when he's...
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, I haven't sort of said anything in public about it. I thought, well, I did get asked to do the new series of Fifth Gear, and this is the series 29, I think. I think it's series 29. Yeah, well, I've been on it since series 10, and I knew I'd done at least 27 series... 17 series, which is a lot of series, is.
Mm.
It's a show that's sort of very important to me. And also, I really enjoy the presenters that I present with. I've always felt very privileged to do it. But I decided to bow out. I decided that this was it. You know, I'm not gonna do it. And it's sort of two reasons. First reason, it's going to be electric only.
Mm.
And whilst I think I understand why they're doing it, I think that it's not appropriate for Fifth Gear. Because I think it should be a kind of broader church.
It's an interesting move.
Yeah.
I wonder whether it wouldn't have been... I mean, is this it? They're not going back to internal combustion?
I don't know, man. It feels a bit bandwagon-y.
It feels like
a
spin-off show. Yeah, I mean, I just think you could sort of seamlessly fold this into the main show and just test more electric cars or have a running strand every week you look at something.
Yeah.
Of where we're going,
yeah,
and then you can balance it editorially in a magazine show with stuff that's not electric for people who are not that interested. I don't know.
Historical stuff, yeah. So I think there's that, and I think by the time the cars that they're going to review air on the TV show, I would have already reviewed them in detail on YouTube. So I sat there and kind of thought, well, there's that, and. I'm probably the production company who make Fifth Gear are not my best friends these days, so I'll probably want to leave that there. But I just
what
thought,
did you do, or what did they do,
it was an abuse of power, maybe, should we say, an abuse of power that and out of principle I'm holding a grudge. So
okay.
But yeah, it was a difficult decision to make, and I thought, do you know what? I've put so much energy into my own YouTube channel and this podcast that people are listening to, and those are our own products. They're not made for anybody else, as it were.
Hmm.
My own IP, as they say in the industry. I thought I'll just crack on with this, and you know, just keep delving in. The problem with is as I don't want to be down. I don't want to sound down about it. And I definitely don't want people to think that I've fallen out with any of the presenters, because I really haven't. They're all friends of mine. Vicky, Jason, obviously Tiff, Jimmy. They're all really lovely people. I know Rory.
Karun's doing it as well, isn't he, this series, I think?
Yeah, Karun.
He's still
doing Karun it. Is, and he's a top dog. He's good.
Mm.
So it's nothing personal with them, because I'm actually going to really miss that, because that was one of my few team activities with work. Everything seems to be kind of solo these days, apart from this podcast. So it was difficult, but I felt like the time was right. So yeah, from 2006 until now, there's Fifth Gear's always been bubbling away, kind of here and there.
Mm. Mm.
But I think in the name of my own material, in the name of detail on features, and in the name of, I don't know, not being massively friendly with the production company at the moment, I would maybe... yeah. No, that's not to say I'll never do any TV again. That's not what I'm saying, Richard. You know what I mean?
It's not what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is...
The terrestrial television door is always open, Johnny.
Well, you never say never. Never say never, ever.
I mean, it takes a bloody long time to open sometimes, but it's never closed, put it that way.
It does,
or it's closed, but you can open it again if you like, but just have to wait.
It's one of those roller shutters that's not assisted, and it's so geared. It's so high geared, or low geared.
Well, like those very busy blinds you sometimes get in houses. I sent you a video for those, didn't I? Like last year when we were staying in that place in Suffolk. And the house, a lovely house that we were renting, really beautiful house right on the coast overlooking the sea. It was magical. I absolutely loved it there. But
all of the
blinds is a good job. I liked having the living room windows open so you could look out at the sea twinkling in the moonlight at night, because bloody hell, it would have taken a while to shut the blinds.
What, is it like a 10-minute job?
Oh, it's only gone down 6 inches. Why are they so low geared?
Is it like a crawler gear?
I don't know.
Is it like the Ford Bronco manual gearbox, 7-speed manual? So, and but number one gear is like only climbing mountains and nothing else.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think the gearboxes and a lot of manual Porsches are like that as well, aren't they? Porsche seem to put on very, very high gears on their manual cars these days.
Yeah, they do.
For emissions reasons, I think.
And
so you could do like 90 in second, and it's...
You can.
Oh, my God. The sun's come up. That's how long it's taken me.
I was going to say the blinds are like that to dissuade you from using them and leaving them down because you're seven feet from a lighthouse. And in the middle of the night, you get the brightest. It's almost like a scene from E.T. when the ship lands or whatever, or when people come along to rob E.T. They don't rob him, they kidnap him, whatever.
Yeah,
you know the scene.
Rob him. Steal E.T.'s wallet. What money is this? We stayed in a lighthouse keeper's cottage once. I mean, he wasn't there because they've automated all of the lighthouses in the UK now. So the lighthouse keeper's cottage was rented out as a holiday cottage, and the lighthouse
was
still
mega?
Going. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was delightful. But I rather hoped that you could lie in bed at night and there would be sort of, you just see this gentle intermittent glow at the window as the lighthouse was doing its business. But no, I guess they're sort of so...
They're focused. Yeah, on far afield.
So Fresnel lens, something
did
like
you
that,
see the little blue character from In the Night Garden bobbing around in the middle of the night in his hopeless little dinghy? Like, because that's not dangerous. with only one little dismal like tea light, the sort of tea light you get on a restaurant table between the two people sitting at
the table. I like the design of that boat, because I think if you took that light off it would be significantly less cozy looking.
Well,
that little
candlelight
makes it somehow cozy.
Well, candlelight,
and that
does
means
suit
it's appealing.
Well, it makes a power cut go from slightly creepy to being charming.
Yes, but then
it?
I discovered this a few years ago when the power went off, and I thought, that's okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
I'll just read. I've got a book on the go. I'll get some candles going. I'll read. It's bloody difficult to read by candlelight.
Oh yeah, you've
candles
got to really
are
focus.
Crap. Compared to say electric lights, and. After a while, you get real eye strain, so we went to the pub instead. But it was just, you've got this romantic notion of, I shall sit here and read by candlelight, as people have done for centuries. But no, it's a faff.
There's a reason why people in the olden days went to bed earlier and probably had a little bit more sex. Because...
Well, I'm not sure they did, though, did they? Yeah. Because sex might equal another baby if you're not careful in the olden days.
Oh, well, I mean, depends what you interpret sex as.
Prithee, wife. Anyway. Will Souse give me a hand job this evening? For there is nothing to watch on the telly.
No.
For it has not been invented yet.
That's right.
What were we talking about?
Flickering LED candles are about to run out of charge.
So anyway, to sum up, you haven't fallen out with the rest of Fifth Gear, but you're just not doing it because you've decided to move on and focus.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, anyway,
I wish them all well, and I'm still friendly with them and all that, you know, like, you know, all the presenters and all that. They're lovely people.
On that side of things. Good. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Yeah.
You know what we didn't mention? We haven't mentioned for the past couple of weeks.
What was that?
And it seems, and people have been sending it to us a bit. It seems to be up our street.
Oh.
That Hyundai Grandeur Resto mod that Hyundai themselves made.
Yes.
Do you like?
It's incredible. It's proof that I think Kia Hyundai have totally not just got their fingers on the pulse, is they're almost the tastemakers at the moment. They're seeing this, they've seen this real thirst for 80s stuff amongst people who were there the first time around and this younger generation who seemingly are obsessed with pop-up headlights. And just going, yeah, let's just do some real authentic 80s. And they're doing it so well. Well, they did the Hyundai Pony concept, the Pony 40 or whatever it was called for the 40. Yeah. I mean, the Hyundai Pony was a laughable car when I was a lad. Like, if you saw Hyundai Pony, you just giggled and pointed at it. And they've gone, do you know what? We're going to make it cool. We're going to celebrate it and make it look desirable. And everyone's gone, bloody hell, that looks top. Really tasteful. Yeah. And they've done it with conviction, haven't they? It's a bit like people that wear risky fashion clothing. If you rock it with conviction, you just go, yeah, do you know what? That guy's wearing some quite out there stuff and not many people could carry it, but he's carrying it because he believes in it. And I admire people.
Is that like when you and me went to that GQ Awards thing and we both decided to wear slightly frantic clothing?
Oh, we did.
If we just rocked it like it was deliberate, not rather that we got dressed in the dark, then people would go, ooh, he's quite fashion forward, isn't he? Because none of those things should go together.
Do you know what? I actually really enjoyed doing that. It was quite liberating.
Yeah.
Because it was outside of the comfort zone. But once you've committed, it's like once you've gone through the door of the fancy dress party in your fancy dress, you can't just run away and take it all off. You're in. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you've got to double down. So I went to a fancy dress party the other week.
Did you?
And, yeah, I went to a mate's 50th and it was fancy dress. The theme was come as a childhood hero.
Oh, my gosh.
So I went as Chris Lowe out of Pet Shop Boys.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
One of my mates did go, you've made no effort whatsoever. You're just wearing a puffer jacket and jeans. And I was like, I went and bought a stripy T-shirt, especially because there's a very iconic photo of Chris Lowe wearing a stripy T-shirt. But I didn't take my puffer jacket off all night because the party was outdoors and it was a bit chilly. So
it's a practical solution.
But I also bought a boy baseball cap, proper, genuine 80s boy baseball cap off eBay.
Did you? Was it a lot of money?
No, it wasn't, weirdly. You see them around for a lot of money, but this one, I mean, maybe it was hooky, I don't know. It's got a boy label in it, but it was, yeah. But the way in which I committed to the look.
Pet Shop Boys fancy dress, brilliant.
I wore, I had a keyboard, I had a little child's keyboard on a strap, and I wore that around my, you know, like a keytar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wore that all night, and I wore my sunglasses pretty much all night.
Oh, you really did it well then. And
so I did. I feel like I did commit to the look. No,
you weren't cold in the outdoor venues.
Because I got my puffer jacket on.
You got your puffer jacket on. It's just, was it wet look puffer?
No, it's. I mean, that's the thing. I didn't buy a puffer jacket. It's just a puffer jacket that I own.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you've worked for the BBC. But, I mean, you've got a black puffer jacket. It's just.
It's not one of those though. It's not the obligatory North Face puffer that all BBC crew have to wear.
Yeah, but obviously you have to remain neutral throughout because it's the BBC. But yes, it's a North Face one.
Well, that's it. Sometimes you see presenters on things like Country File. They've got the obligatory BBC North Face puffer jacket, but someone's stuck a piece of black gaffer tape over the logo, so they don't get in trouble.
I've noticed that. Yeah, that's actually the reason why I didn't buy a North Face jacket one. When I was doing when I do TV and things. I made a point of not wearing one.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Honestly. I did. So I did a little bit of investigation. I went down the RAB route, which was a lesser known route at the time.
Okay. You should talk to my friend Matt, who lives up your way, because you know he works in the outdoor clothing business and he's very sneery about North Face. And it always annoys him how many people on TV wear.
Oh, well, I'm going to speak to your mate, Matt. I know where he lives. I'm going to speak to him about it. Yeah, I'll knock on his window.
He'll sort you out.
3 a.m. With my bright RAB coat on. Do you know what? I've damaged my RAB coat, which I've had for I don't know, decades. I had an armful of tools that I'd taken out of the boot of the car to put back in the garage after filming a recent barn find, of which you will appreciate. In fact, that barn find, I'm just thinking that, yeah, that barn find's just gone out when people are listening to this. So filming an incredible Time Warp Ford Granada special edition barn find.
Oh, it's that one.
Yeah. And I'd filled the boot of the car with tools because we were going to try and get it to fire up. And about 3 days went by afterwards and I still had all the tools rattling around in the boot. And the car stank of fuel, which is ironic because it's an EV, because I had two gallons of petrol in the boot. And one morning before a shoot, I got up early doors and went, oh shit, the boot's full of all that stuff and I've got to take it out. I hurriedly ran down the side of the house to put it all in the garage, and there was a screw sticking out of one of the fence panels. And as I shimmied down it with my arms full of like ratchets, petrol, it tore the sleeve of my sacred puffer. And of course, immaculate timing, now that the weather right now is flipping freezing, and now I've got
it's
like
puffer weather.
Yeah, and I've got a damaged sacred puffer, so I'm a bit upset. I just thought I'd share that with you. You know, there is a context to it, but the barn find was worth it. Just going to say that
a puffer jacket's okay now. I have a feeling that we've been told we're not supposed to wear puffer jackets because they like boiled geese to make them or something. But I'm not clear on that.
There's ones where if they use goose down, they have to mention the sort of living conditions of the geese and how the feathers are sourced. But there's a lot of now man-made technical fabrics. Alternatives that are really good insulators. A lot of recycled threads and fabrics and stuff that's sort of mulched. So yeah, there's a lot of that going. Of course, sheep's wool is worth nothing at the moment, which is sad.
And so I gather,
I mean, you could fill the roof of your house with sheep's wool for about 80 quid, which is and it's decent stuff. Although I wouldn't buy a pair of trousers made of sheep's wool, I don't think.
Why not? You get wool trousers. They're quite nice.
Are they not itchy, though? I'd look like I had terrible genital issues.
I get very itchy off wool if it's certain kinds of wool, but, like, it doesn't...
It's got to be a mix.
I don't know why.
It's got to be a wool mix.
Mix with what?
I don't know. Probably something like Groove Rider, maybe SL2.
Yeah.
What?
Pete Tong.
Yeah, a little bit of... of course, I was in Brighton the other day, hence the London to Brighton chat earlier. And I didn't see Fatboy Slim, which is a bit upsetting. I mean, I figured that... I thought it was obligatory. I thought there was a deal with Brighton Council that if you ever go to Brighton, you immediately have to see Fatboy Slim or Zoe Ball or another famous Brighton person who talks about Brighton a lot.
Yeah, Steve Coogan. He lives down there sometimes.
Does he? Okay, so Steve Coogan's got a Brighton place, yeah. Do you know what? There's an awful lot of DSG peacocking on the seafront late at night. It really pissed me off because we were still...
Oh, there always is, though, in coastal towns.
Yeah,
there
is. There is, but it was just crap. You know, and it was all Audi S3s.
This is the coastal town.
There was so much kind of double clutch tromboning going on, which sounds like a euphemism, but it's not. It's just
what do they use for taxis down in Brighton these days?
Oh, well, the colour scheme for the taxis is incredible. It's like a teal bonnet and boot lid on a white car.
Oh, teal?
Yeah, like real 90s ski jacket colour. Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good. Quite like
it's
it.
It's a long time since I've been to Brighton, but I don't remember that. Sure. I don't remember a lot about when I went to Brighton.
A lot of hybrids, a lot of hybrid taxis I noticed.
And
I
okay.
And I know we had...
You sometimes get towns where it's like the Octavia still has the minicab stronghold, I feel.
Yeah, or the Superb if you're going to go long leg room.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I can't remember if there... No, there wasn't that many diesels. It was mostly petrol hybrids.
From Brighton's sort of quite eco-conscious, I think, isn't it, probably, as a
Brighton's
place.
Progressive is what you call progressive, isn't it? Apart from the peacocking on the seafront with the...
But I bet those are people from up the coast who are just passing through all... They'll be then through Hove and then all the way down to Bournemouth or somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
peacocking.
Yeah.
Seafront peacocking.
Seafront peacocking, that's what it's all about. Yeah, and it's true, daytime seafront peacocking is different to nighttime. See, daytime is you've always got your geezers on their sort of two-stroke Lambrettas with all the silly badges and wing mirrors and... You know, pretending that they're Sting or The Who, and then you've got, which is fine to a point. It's all role play and escapism. I get it. And then you've got a little bit of there's always sometimes a little bit of Americana. You know, 50s pickup truck, maybe a Cadillac, maybe a Mustang convertible, that kind of thing. That's another sort of tribe. And then of course you've got your biker tribes, as in like motorbikes, not scooters. So you've got your Harleys and your kind of spokes bikes, your kind of Yamahas and your Gixxers and all that jingle. Yeah, and they all kind of convene, which I quite like, because it's like the scene from Anchorman where all the different news crews and they're all kind of eyeing one another up to see who is genuinely a bit cooler. But it's not that it's not spoken; it's just all eye contact and body language. And that's one of the things I like about the world that we're in, the sort of automotive world. There is some very odd peacocking that goes on, and we're all responsible for it ultimately.
I didn't mean Bournemouth, did I? Bournemouth's like down in
Bournemouth's a long way. Almost. No,
yeah, I meant Eastbourne, didn't I? Eastbourne.
Yeah, you've got Eastbourne. Yeah, you've got Eastbourne.
I always get them mixed up. They're sort of retirement.
Yeah, Eastbourne's near where I jumped that bloody Sierra Sapphire, the Dukes of Essex, ages ago. I did that in Polbrook, which is next to Eastbourne, I think.
That's what you promised to do this week on the podcast.
What?
Is tell the story of how, when you were working at Max Power, your colleagues turned your desk chair into an enormous penis and balls.
Oh, what the... Yes, the parcel tape cock and ball chair. Yes, that would have been a... Well, two girls were responsible for that who worked in the office.
Really?
Yeah, one of them's Nicola and one of them's Jenny. And Nicola and Jenny knew that I was out on a shoot. It was either a two-day job or one-day job. I can't even remember. And I can't remember. I mean, I don't know why they did it. They just thought it would be funny, because I think I used to do the odd prank, as you might imagine.
It just struck me as such a moronically mannish thing to do. It never occurred to me that it was.
No, it was two women. And
fair play.
And they used an enormous amount of brown parcel tape. I think they said they used 6 industrial rolls, and the industrial rolls are really. I don't know how many meters of tape that is.
How did they construct the inner skeleton of particularly the balls? Because from memory, having seen the picture of this,
they screwed
up.
You
couldn't just do this with pure tape, could you?
No, you couldn't.
You'd have to build a frame.
It was on Max Power and Revs as well. We used to review a lot of products. So you'd get loads of deliveries of parcels and cardboard boxes and bubble pack from exhausts and head units and, you know, tuning stuff. So we had loads of bubble pack. So they wrapped a sphere of bubble pack in their arms and then taped it, the loose shape, together, and then started to just go over it with brown parcel shape, and then they taped it onto the side of the shaft. Now, the shaft was created... The shaft was created with, again, bubble pack wrapped around the backrest of an office chair. So you'd get the upright position. And then I believe the bell end was created, again, by using some sort of ultra bulbous bubble pack. You know, the chubby bubble pack.
Chubby bubble.
So that, and then just loads of parcel tape to finish, a couple of detailed markings with a Sharpie. And then the finishing touch for me was, I didn't clock it at first, the computer mouse on my Apple Mac computer, they'd created a huge cock with a bell on top. So you had to hold the top of the phallus to actually move the mouse around. It's just so silly.
Is this in the days of wired mouses?
Yeah,
mice
this was
still?
This was wired. This was wired. But you know, the other thing was, it was so well attached to the chair that it took me so long to even work out how to unpick it, because they'd done a hell of a job. I left it there for a week. I sat on it for a week, and it was very uncomfortable because it took up most of the chairs. So I was sort of perched on the edge of this dick chair. And it's just silly. It's just stupid. So, yeah.
And was this? Hang on, did you not get a warning from HR about it? Is that the rest of the story?
Well, they did get a warning from HR about it.
They got a warning from HR?
Yeah, I mean, I got a warning for the fact that I'd left it there for a week and had immediately got rid of it, because they have high-profile visitors now and again. But I took... And I told you about the time. I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate. I'll probably tell you this one another time. But I, inside my chest of drawers next to my desk, you know, my desk drawers, I had an incredibly offensive photograph that I'd found in the archives of the building one day when I was looking for some transparency film of another Max Power event or feature car. And nobody admitted to knowing how it was created, where it came from, or anything. But it was just in the archive. And it was an original photograph from the 70s. I'm not going to tell you what it is because it's too offensive. But let's just say unforgettable and one of one. So I brought it upstairs. And what I used to do is wait until... And actually, this happened mostly when I was on Car Magazine because I carried it over to Car. I used to wait until someone was doing a really high-profile interview on the phone with, like, a industry boss. And then I used to just slip it. I just slide it across their desk under their head while they were making notes and just watch the reaction. And a few of you that used to work with me will know how offensive this picture was. Anyway, when I left the company...
Offensive by modern standards or just offensive even back then?
I think it's quite offensive. It was explicit, but not... Okay. I would say not in an enjoyable way. But when I left the company, I decided it should stay in the building. It shouldn't come with me. It's the photo is more powerful than me. So I nominated a custodian to look after it. And I actually, to this day, I don't really know where it is. I don't know if it's still in the company or what. But people that used to work in the company and people that know me will know the photograph that I speak of. It doesn't involve cars. Let's just put it that way. And
well, we'll put the picture of Johnny's cock and balls chair on the Patreon. You did actually put it on your Instagram last week.
I did, and what's quite cool is in the background you can see an extremely young Mark Riccioni, who at the time was our school leaver kind of apprentice kid, who was always showing signs of talent, and now he's a highly successful automotive photographer for Top Gear and for Car and for loads, and commercial photographer for Porsche and a couple of other brands. Mm. And he's got a hell of a car selection.
Yeah, we could talk about Mark's car collection.
That's another episode. Yeah,
remarkable things. But well, as it stands, we should probably wrap this one up. Before we go, I've got three things to tell you. The first one is that Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show. You probably know that by now, but do go there today after you've listened to this, because you can watch an amazing barn find of a very special fault. And also your new playlist, which is Generation Flex. About young folk with... interesting car collections.
Yeah, exactly. Championing young blood, not the singer, young people who are 17 to 25, have an interest in cars, have an interest in driving, or maybe owning cars. Not necessarily expensive cars at all, actually. In fact, quite the opposite. Affordable, quirky, interesting stuff. So that is what Generation Flex is all about.
Followed by Generation Rickets, which will be a look at extremely old people who own pre-1905 spindly wheel dog carts. But ideally with a highly tuned Vauxhall red top.
I'd like that. Yeah, an EcoBoost V6 with a pair of massive snails on it, but with with grey wheel, grey tyres. It's always the side of a slow car. It's got grey tyres. Isn't it? It's grey tyres. Like an old lady's bicycle.
Yeah. The second thing I've got to tell you is that next week, on the evening of Monday, the 6th of December, I'm going to be up at Caffeine and Machine, the car-related cafe in Warwickshire, having a chat with Alex Goy, the car journalist, on stage as part of his I Love You Man series, in which every month he invites someone to come and have a chat with him. About life and
men's
sort of
mental health.
On male mental health, yeah, and the things that men sometimes don't talk about enough. But we'll also be talking about cars and Top Gear and all sorts of other things, I imagine. But so if you want to come with that, tickets are on sale from the Caffeine and Machine website, I believe. And hopefully see you there. So that's next Monday, 6th of December. Come along, it'll be fun or near offer. And the third thing I have to tell you is that if you're of a certain age, you might remember that in the 80s, cream cakes were advertised on TV for some reason with the slogan Naughty But Nice. But what you might not realise is that the slogan Naughty But Nice was created by Salman Rushdie.
Is that true?
That is absolutely
true. Cream cakes, Salman, Naughty But Nice.
Yeah. Don't you remember those ads?
Yes, I do.
why were they advertising cakes on TV? I don't think they're even allowed to, but yeah. It was quite a long-running campaign. But yeah, Salman Rushdie, before he became a successful novelist, was a copywriter for O&M, the advertising agency. And he came up with that. Wow. He also, if you want to dive down a Rushdie advertising wormhole, he wrote a jingle for a building society. I can't remember what it was, the Burnley Building Society, something like that. It's an incredible disco track. And he wrote the lyrics to it, which were all about saving money, but delivered in a disco style. I'll try and find it and stick it up on the Patreon for our show notes. So yeah, that's what Salman Rushdie did before he became a novelist and then the subject of a fatwa.
That's right, fatwa.
Fatwa. I only found out quite recently, his fatwa hideaway was just down the road from where I live now in London.
Why would you find a hideaway in London?
I know. Go to the Shetland Islands or something. I know.
That's a shit idea.
I'll just. No one will notice me. Well, maybe that's it. He's just hiding in plain sight because there's so many people. It's like you don't want to go somewhere where you'd be sort of, you know, one of only seven in the village.
I suppose.
So
go
now. I wonder if Salman Rushdie's hiding here. Oh yeah, there's that guy.
There he is.
Who looks like him? It must be him. But London.
Bloody hell!
There we
that's
are.
That's a great bit of trivia, Richard. I love
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Naughty but nice, bit like this podcast.
Naughty but nice.
Really, involving
I think the original one was
London to Brian. And
Naughty but nice, and Jesus is a twat. Salman, stop with this offensive religious stuff. You've got to knock it on the head. One day you'll get a fatwa, my friend.
No, it's like the beginning of that slogan was really good. I think the ending. Yeah. I think we need to change the ending. There's something not
might
quite
upset
right.
Upset the Pope a bit. Yes. Well, there we are. Another episode of Smith and Sniff, Britain's leading podcast for idle chat about Surrey and 80s adverts for cakes comes to an end, but we'll do this all again next week. So hope to see you then, but until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Got any salmon? No tea.